great medieval mystic, Meister Eckhart, said, if you only pray one prayer, ever, and that prayer is thank you, that is sufficient. If you only pray one prayer, and that prayer is thank you, then that is sufficient. Which is quite a lot coming from Eckhart, considering how much he wrote and how much he had to say about God. You know, kind of boiled it down for us. This, standing in this place on this Sunday, this day has a number of significances. It is the end of the liturgical church year. Next Sunday is the beginning of the year. It's New Year's Day. It is the day that we have stopped our journeying toward the resurrection. We've stopped for this year. It is the year that we begin again to look towards the promise of the Christ child, to look towards the discovery of divinity in our life, to look forward to that discovery and then the birth of that into our lives, to the discovery and the wondrousness of putting our arms around that and finding out what it is, and then to finding out that we probably fall a little bit short of that, and to do the work that we are called to do, to dig in, that we might participate in the resurrection, to live out that resurrection, to step into the life of the new church, to step into the new Jerusalem, to become a new person, to live that through in the summer months, and then to even look beyond our lives on those days that we have just passed of All Saints, and to come to this day. And I think it is no act of providence that in this place we have placed our Thanksgiving celebration, because we stand in this moment of the end of our journey this year, the end of our journey, and it is the moment of giving thanks. One supposedly having nothing to do with the other, but perhaps God had something to do with it. There is...
That was kind of supposed to be a funny...
That we stand in this place of having incredible thankfulness. Thankfulness for this time. Thankfulness for this space. Thankful for this journey. Thankful for this last trip around the sun. Thankfulness that we again get to step into another journey toward the resurrection on a deeper and more profound level. We stand in this place, and yet, we look towards the scripture this morning, where Jesus is 13 guys hanging out in a room by themselves, scared because somebody's catching them, going to catch them. It sounds like me in high school, hiding out in the boys' bathroom. Bunch of other guys, we're going to get caught without a hall pass. I mean, we're talking about a tiny group of people coming to an assembly and fearing for their lives. And what does Jesus say? You know, this is not the big, you know, rah-rah speech, is it? It's, one of you will betray me. Well, thanks for that. We're scared. You're scaring us more. I mean, you know, that we're in this place, and the response is again from each of the disciples, from every, all 12 of them. There they stand. Certainly not I. It's not I. Is it? Is it I? You know, one of the things that gets lost in that is always that no matter how it gets caught, you know, how it gets put together, it is in the form of a question. The disciples ask, "Is it I? Surely it's not I." But that moment of betrayal. And what does Jesus do? But give thanks. And what happens after the giving of thanks? After the giving of thanks, where do they go? They go to the Mount of Olives. Well, that's a fun place. Let's hang out to the Garden of Gethsemane for a while. Where we are rocked at the very core of our being in doubt and fear. Where we're getting ready to go off to, where? Death. Where we are getting ready to go off to in preparation for the resurrection. This moment of betrayal, this moment of oh, by the way, your best friend Peter, yeah, he's going to betray you too. We do that, we do that in there. All of it stands in this moment. And what does Jesus offer but thanksgiving? Offers us the birthplace of the church. This is the birth of the Christian church, by the way. It's not the resurrection. It's not the... This is the moment where we start doing different things differently than the Israelites did. This is the moment where the church is born, where there is an absolute cosmic break from what had been done in the past. That, yeah, we have Passover meals as Israelites. Yeah, we don't do this whole eat my blood, drink my flesh, whatever you just said. We don't do that. No, that's new. That's not in the normal playbook. This is a new place that we're being called to go. It's a new place that we're being called to go. And here, Jesus offers thanks in the midst of betrayal. Often in this time. Thank you. That's so helpful. Did you hear what she said? She said, I got it wrong, that it's actually eat my flesh, drink my blood. So, I 70,000 dollar seminary education, and there you go. So, thank you. We stand in this place of betrayal that Jesus lays out for us. We offer that we stand in this place of not knowing, of absolute zero joy, zero upshot, zero what is the... And this is the foundational point of the church. This is the point where the church is born. This is the point where we start doing things different. This is the point where God truly begins to come in the midst of the people and that they dwell together. It is this point. What is the correspondence of this offer us? I mean, what is the looking at this in a symbolic way offer us about our lives? Because I don't think, you know, I mean, this is one of our core beliefs about Bible. It's not just a cool thing that happened to get written down. That these things are written down because they offer us something about our lives and about how we move through the world. So, you know, that's all well and cool that happened 2,000 years ago, but who cares? I mean, why is it telling us about our lives and about the way that we move through the world? And my suggestion to you is, it is easy for us to be kind of get the, you know, you should count your blessings kind of speech in this era, in this day, and in this week. But I'm suggesting that what Jesus is pointing to is that we might count our betrayals. That within the very heart of the places that we feel betrayed in this world, in those places that we feel that we are struggling with, in those places that we have experienced pain, in those places of loss, in those places of difficulty, those are the very points and pieces and parts that God is calling to make new, and God is calling to bring the resurrection into our lives. It is not our blessings at the end of the day that give meaning to our lives, that take us to the places that we are going. It is, in fact, those places, in the words of Gibran, the flute that is most touched by the knife plays the sweetest notes. It is those places where we are touched by the knife of living. Where, you know, I watched the Stanford game, some of the Stanford game yesterday. I call it the Stanford game because Cal, well, they didn't really show up. Sorry, Cal. All the Cal fans are just, you know, I've lost them all. So, again and again, watch any football game and you'll watch people taking hits again and again and again and people getting up. And sometimes people get hurt in that process. But it does not mean we are not in the game. It means we take hits in our lives. Our lives are the same way. We take hits in our lives. There are things that do not make sense. There are things of pain. There are things of loss. There are things that we have been afflicted with, that those are, that we count among our betrayals. And even as we stand at this last Sunday of this year, we can look over this past year and say, that is a betrayal. I do not know. I have been, that was not in the brochure of living. I wasn't supposed to get that one. And we stand in that place. And what Jesus is suggesting, what this symbol of us embracing the bread and the wine and making it a part of us, this us, it means us picking up our own truth and making it ours. Swedenborg says again and again, lie to other people if you have to. You know, it's like, no, there aren't, you know, the Nazis come to the door, no, there are no Jews in the attic. That, you know, lie to other people if you have to. That's not a problem. But never lie to yourself. Because when we lie to ourselves, that we isolate our entire heavenly community from being able to help us, from being able to inject themselves, because we don't recognize our own truth. And what Jesus does in this moment is take up the very elements of our own divinity and take them in. And the invitation to us is that what has happened to you in this past year, what has happened to you in your life, there is within it the seeds of the resurrection. And those points of betrayal are the points that you might actually, that you will come to know a depth of meaning and power that you might never understand. Let me give you an example. I grew up a kid, and I wanted to be a helicopter pilot. In fact, I joined the Army because what I wanted to do was fly helicopters. From the time I can remember, in the margins of my paper, my homework were little helicopters. I wouldn't actually do the homework, but I would draw helicopters in the corner of my, you know, that, I mean, I wanted to fly helicopters. And I joined the Army at 17 years old, wanted to fly helicopters, so I had this whole idea of how my life was going to go. And I finally got partway through the physical. Oh, by the way, I was already in, so I couldn't really get out anymore, but I didn't skip over that part. I got through the physical and discovered that I had high-tone hearing loss. I'm high-tone deaf, inherited from my mother. Well, and a lot of AC/DC on 11, but high-tone hearing loss. And would never fly a helicopter. I was angry. You know, I had now just joined the Army, and I was going to go, no stupid helicopter. I began to count that among one of the betrayals. It's like, okay, I thought this was, and I carried that through my life. I carried that as a betrayal. I carried that as something, one of those things back there that's like, well, that didn't work out. I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. But what I discovered is, years later, as I started training for ministry, somebody said to me, and I had this feedback from a number of patients as I began to work in a hospital, work in clinical settings, says, you're a really good listener. I'm like, oh, that's nice. I mean, you know, and I'm with a bunch of other chaplains. I figure, you know, we're all really good listeners, right? We're going to be chaplains. That's what we do. Can't listen. We're really not much good to anybody, are we? And, you know, and so, and yet, here we are. But what I began to discover as I began to get feedback also from my peers and from other people is that my high tone loss made me have to concentrate on people and listen to them and actually look at them and hear what they are trying to say and watch their lips in such a way that they actually were, that I was able to discern a depth of their meaning that maybe my peers weren't able to do. That my high-tone hearing loss actually became one of the things that made me a genius at what I began to do. Now, I'm not a genius. I'm not saying I'm a genius. But it began to be one of the core pieces of my skill set, of the very thing that God called me to do. In the psalm we read this morning, the stone that the builder rejected has become the chief cornerstone. That thing that I would have pushed away all of my life, I said, has been, I was at that part, became the very cornerstone of my being, and is the cornerstone of how I am these days. And what I'm suggesting is that each one of you has at your heart and your core, has it, and those betrayals, those things that you put back there, those things that you push away, and say, no, these are not a part of me. I mean, think about how the biblical narrative just plays itself out. It starts with two people in this isolated garden and goes, at, by the end, it is entirely, the entire universe is encompassed in it. Well, God's love is that kind of invitation to us. It starts as this little crack in the wall, and by the time we are done, we are called to be fully immersed and surrounded and held in it. That's the journey of us towards the resurrection, and that we're picking it up and picking it in, and it has become a part of our very being. This journey is the invitation. Don't count your blessings. Count your betrayals. Feel them. Will they feel good? No. Nope. No, it's going to feel good? Nope. Nope. Is this going to be fun? Probably not. Will it be powerful? Will it be meaningful? Will it be worth it? Yes. Yes. Just before I came out here, the day before I came out here, I sat with an old soldier old crusty old sergeant who had his wife is dying of brain cancer. And I sat with him and we were talking, and he is, you know, people with illness, she'd been sick for about 4 years, and people with illness, they sometimes, you know, that different people engage in different ways, and I would never say that, you know, anybody's doing it right or doing it wrong, but he was doing it right. No, kidding. But I would say that, you know, that he had truly engaged in caring for his wife. He had been in the fight. He had encouraged her when she was down. You know, she'd yell at him because he was, you know, telling her to do her exercises, and I mean, it was tumultuous. But he was in the fight with her. And just this last week, she has gone on to hospice care, and she's not going to beat this cancer. And we were talking, and he said, "Chaplain, I'm just so grateful. I'm just so grateful." And I was like, "What are you grateful for?" You know, the great thing about being a chaplain is you can just kind of like, "Well, what are you grateful for?" You don't really, it's not rocket science. You're not really, you know, but you just like, what did they say? And say it back to them. No, I mean, really, it's a little more than that. But, and he said, "What are you grateful for?" And he said, "I've had 20 years with her. I got to journey with her in this time and support her and care for her. I'm gonna be with her as she goes. I got to have her a part of my life, and she offered me so much more than I ever given her in these past 25 years. I stand that he has, in the fullness of this, picked up that reality of his own life, taken it in. And he is, in that, living out that promise that Jesus holds up of what our lives might be when we truly and authentically take in the truth of our lives, no matter how difficult, no matter how painful, no matter how hard, no matter how frustrating, no matter how angry, you know, but if we go through our lives, you know, doing the Marge Simpson thing of like, just push it down, we will never have that experience that God calls us to of permitting that pain to be transformed. The magic of this journey, is not sanitary. It's not clean. You'll probably get some bumps and bruises along the way, but that in its process and in its life, it offers us new life and new joy and new beginning every time. Every time. Probably the greatest saint of this communion, Helen Keller. I mean, a young woman, Tuscumbia, Alabama, born unable to hear, unable to speak, unable to see. She goes on, runs wild for the first part of her life, ends up beginning to figure out patterns of meaning by the vibrations on the trachea that as it's held up, and discerns that these might actually be words, and beginning to have them spelled out in her hand. She would go on from that moment to a depth of study where she would earn PhDs, where she would be one of the most renowned speakers and sought after speakers in the world. She would go on to learn seven languages. She would go on to and credits her Swedenborgianism and her engagement with this tradition as the core way for giving language to the geography of what she knew inside of her. And when she was asked, about her handicap, she said, "I am thankful for my handicap. I am thankful for my handicap. Because through it, it has given me myself, my work, and my God." Brothers and sisters, this Thanksgiving, I encourage you, be thankful for your blessings, absolutely. But also, review your year, that as you get ready to step off on this next journey that we will step into of looking for the Christ child and all that, as you get ready to step, look at your year and discern maybe just one betrayal out there that is hanging on, just one moment where you just can't make sense of it, and when you think of it, it drives you nuts, or one point of pain, one place where your heart's been broken, or your mind just can't get around it, one point where the 30 pieces of silver were plunked down, and you feel somehow the knife has touched your life, and in that, offer up that prayer of thank you, and see what happens. Offer up and step into the existence of what that means. Feel what that means. Think about what it means. Embrace the truth of your life. Eat it up. Take it in. Embrace the truth of where you are. Whatever it is, in any way you can, embrace the truth of who and what you are and see what happens. Because my bet, is as we are offered a Lord of life and not of death, as we are offered a life of joy and not of sorrow, that those points of pain, those points of difficulty, those points of anxiety can become the very cornerstones that you will live out of in your days ahead. This is my hope for all of you, as a person, as individuals, as families, and as a community. May you know this blessing going forward.